You have feelings for her, and I don't care that she told me you were nothing but a fling to her. I still want you, and I'm tired of waiting.
I've always known Kathleen had a crush on me. I discouraged it any way I could without rejecting her, by being unavailable and cutting our interaction to the bare acceptable minimum. But I always thought it was the crush of the same variety I had for Miss Flynn, my middle school teacher, when I first discovered my penis was good for more than pissing. One where you feel attraction toward a person, but also recognize how deeply mental the idea of actually being with them would be. Kathleen is the most put-together, ambitious, level-headed, motivated person I know. I'm a busker and a bum, and on weekends, a bloody drunk. We have absolutely nothing in common, other than the fact that we both breathe. Even that is something I'm sure Kathleen is better at. Wait. A fling? Back up. What did you say she told you? I hold my palm up. A part of me acknowledges I'm a heartless SOB for asking about Rory when she just bled her heart out and confessed her undying love, but we'll get to that in a second. Right after we discuss my bleeding heart. See, Kath, I'm selfish too. Really, what did you find in me? She stares at her feet, biting on her lip.
Remember at my house? When you went to the toilet, you got back and saw Rory and me holding hands. That was a minute after she told me she was planning on sleeping with you. I confessed my feelings for you and she told me she didn't care. She said I got the money and Dad and the heritage and she would get the guy. That she'd ruin you for me. That's why I haven't tried to stay in contact with her, Mal. I was deeply hurt.
I take a step back, digesting. It sounds nothing like Rory. Not only is she not a cunning cow, but she's also too blasé to voice something like that aloud. It sounds like something out of Cruel Intentions, not the mouth of a Disney princess. Then again, Kath is not a liar. At least I've never caught her in a lie before and I've known her all my life. I gather Kathleen in my arms, pulling her to my chest. Kath. She flinches in my arms. She knows. She can't not know. I've shagged, snogged, fingered nearly every girl in this village, always careful not to touch her. And not just because her dad warned me off. Listen to me. You're beautiful, smart, funny, and make a mean cup of tea. But you also feel a lot like a sister. Too much for me to want to shove my hand into your knickers. And I don't think that'd ever change. I'd rather kick someone's arse for treating you badly than to be the wanker to actually mistreat you. You following? I feel her body going rigid in my arms. I press a kiss on her shampooed, carefully combed hair. Missing Rory's tousled nest of random colors, light roots, dark middle, bleached tips. I'm sorry if she said that to you, I add.
What do you mean if? She did?
Kath rears her head back, the light in her eyes flickering like a dying flame.
You believe me, right? You know I'm telling the truth?
She tugs at my shirt. Sean likes you? I change the subject.
Really?
She sulks like I just suggested she date a bucket of lube.
Well, I don't like him.
That's fine, but I think it's time to find someone you do. I'm trying the band-aid method. Fast and burning as opposed to slow and excruciating. If I break her heart once, she'll glue it back together and move on. If I break it one crack at a time, she'll hold on to some silly hope this could happen. It won't. Whether Rory wants me or not, I'll never be with Kath. I sidestep, push the key into the lock and close the door behind me. Leaving her outside. Then I walk into my granddad's darkened living room, take his phone book from the coffee table, sit down on his couch and dial Debbie Jenkins' number.
Hello?
Miss Jenkins.
Who is it?
My name is Mal. Malachy. I'm Father Doherty's grandson. I expect her to feign recognition. I know she knows my grandfather, but instead of offering some sort of greeting, she says nothing at all. The silence is like a nail dragged over a blackboard. I cram words into it, desperately trying to fill the void. I'm calling because, well, I wanted to see how Rory is doing. We got to hang out while she was here and she was quite emotional and... Put more ands in the sentence, Muppet. I sound like I need to wear a helmet indoors. What the feck is wrong with me? But she is still not saying anything, and now I'm trying to figure out what the feck is wrong with her. I tally all stupid things I'm saying and thinking right now, as if this is some sort of a job interview. Anyway, is she there? I clear my throat.
No.
Debbie Jenkins clips. More silence. Rory Jenkins despises her mother and I'm starting to see why. May I have her number, please?
Malachy?
She lets out an exaggerated sigh.
Listen, I know you and my daughter had a thing. We're not as distant as she'd like people to believe. Rory is inexperienced, impressionable, and hopelessly romantic. I'm sure it got blown into this huge something in both your heads, but let's admit it, just between the two of us, it doesn't exactly have a future, does it?
I'm torn between telling her to fuck off and pleading my case. If I thought it didn't have a future, I wouldn't be calling. She continues.
She moved out. She's in college. She's dating.
Dating? I snap.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie lights a fag on the other side of the line.
A very nice guy, too. In fact, I'm sure she won't mind if I send you the pictures she took of you. They're lying somewhere around her room. She never took them with her. Would you like that? For safekeeping?
I can feel the napkin with our contract burning a hole in the back of my jeans. I take it everywhere, like I expect to see her out and about in Tolka or Dublin and wave it in her face. See, remember, we're supposed to be together. My pride urges me to tell Debbie she can shove the unwanted photos of me where the sun don't shine, but ego is a luxury broken hearts cannot afford. Please do, I mutter. I start to give her my address, but she tells me she'll send them to Father Doherty. I actually prefer it that way, because my house is the farthest from anywhere else in the village, and I'm prone to having my mail lost. How is she doing? I ask again before she hangs up. I can't help myself, even if I'm starting to believe Kathleen about the whole one-night stand thing. So what if Rory suggested long distance? She was caught in the moment. The magic wore off quickly for her, that's for sure.
I told you, Maliki. She's fine.
Can I call you and make sure she's okay from time to time? Hang up the phone, you sorry pile of shite.
I don't think that's a good idea,
Debbie says apologetically.
It'd be for the best if Rory leaves Ireland behind her.
Okay.
Bye.
I received the pictures Debbie Jenkins sent me earlier today. I've dropped by my granddad's house every single day since our phone call, waiting for them. It took them 2 months to arrive. 2 months of me being a celibate, moody eejit. 2 months of me breaking every rule in our stupid contract. I looked for Rory on social media, but she doesn't have any profiles. Or if she does, they're not under her real name. I subscribe to her college's newsletter because it sometimes shouts out students and seeing her name makes me happy. She's won 2 photography contests and helped film a short student movie. But nothing could prepare me for the moment I flipped the pictures over. Fine quality, by the way. And saw the captions she'd put on the back of them. Picture 1 of me singing, busking. He was a terrible flirt, and he could be so cheesy. Picture 2 of me standing on the threshold of the Boar's Head, posing for her like Marilyn Monroe. He talks too much, and sometimes doesn't make any sense. Picture 3, both of us in bed, my bed, after I gave her 300 orgasms and a part of my heart. He tries way too hard in bed. The worst thing is, shortly thereafter at the Boar's Head, I took the napkin out and compared her handwriting on the contract to the words on the back of the pictures. Sean, Daniel, and I all concluded it was the same handwriting. So it's not like her mother could have faked this. Daniel drums the table.
Well then, I think it's safe to say you can move on with your life now. She sounds like a world-class slag.
The thing is, she is not, I slur. I pick up my 5th, 6th pint and chug it down. Kathleen is sitting across from us with her friends again. Sean is staring at her, pining. Again. She's doing the same. To me. I wish they'd just shag and let me drown in my misery. She is not a slag at all. But the more time passes, the more the crisp memory of her not being a slag dims. The captions on the pictures are now more vivid than her innocent smile in my head. I'm going to call her mum. I announce.
Dumbest idea you've had in a while.
Daniel does a thumbs down, whistling as he crashes his hand against the table.
And you're never short of those.
Borderline suicidal. Sean bobs his head, dragging his eyes from Kath. Ever since our conversation by my grandfather's door, she's been dropping by my house quite a lot. Always in skimpy dresses that look very odd on her, and always with a fresh platter of something good for me to eat, plus a bottle of wine or a few cans of Guinness in her hands. I invite her in, eat while she tells me stories about whatever is happening in her life, then send her on her way. On the surface, she seems content with being just friends. A dom girlfriend, I suppose, with that kind of attire. No, I need to talk to Rory directly. I shake my head and stand. I still keep the napkin, of course, returning it carefully to my pocket, but have broken every rule under the sun. Now here I am, dialing Debbie's number. Again. She picks up on the third ring. There's a time difference, and I know I'm catching her early in the morning.
Hello?
Debbie. Drunk Mal is obviously on a first-name basis with Rory's mother. Sober Mal, however, is worried for Drunk Mal's bullocks.
Yes?
She already sounds on edge. It's Mal, Father Doherty's grandson.
What do you want?
Your daughter. Is it not painfully, pathetically clear by now? Cheers for the pictures, I hiccup into the phone. She is very talented, our Rory, isn't she? I know I come off as a stalker. The first call was a shot in the dark. The second one is a shot in my foot. I am unwanted in their lives. That much is obvious. Yet I keep coming back.
What do you want?
She asks again. Tough crowd. All right, straight to the point it is. I want to write Rory a letter, but I don't want to send it to you. I want to send it directly to her. I know where she goes to school, so it's not like I won't be able to find out myself. Now, it's just a matter of you making it easy or hard for me. I have a feeling she wasn't planning on me ever seeing these captions, and I'm willing to keep this our little secret if you give me her P.O. box. I'm blackmailing my future mother-in-law. This will make my promise to Rory to invite her for Christmas every year tricky. Debbie mumbles a few things, but surprisingly, she gives me the address. I write it down on the back of my hand, then on a piece of paper, then as a note on my phone. You know, just in case.
It's not going to do you any good, she murmurs bitterly. My daughter doesn't want you, Malachi.
See you next Christmas, Miss Jenkins. I'm just acting the maggot, like she's a maid or something, but a part of me wants to believe what I'm saying, which, of course, speaks volumes about my level of intoxication. See her at Christmas. Ha. Cheerio, I sing-song. She hangs up on me. Hope Debbie doesn't plan on getting any of Mammy's special mince pies next Christmas. She doesn't deserve them.
8. Present. Rory. I didn't leave my room the entire day yesterday, determined to avoid Mal. Actually, that's not true. I left it one time when I heard Mal's old car barking exhaust smoke down the road and knew he had gone. Where, I have no idea. I went out then, slipped into my Toms, and marched the entire rain-soaked way to Main Street, stomping on puddles and flipping the bird to sheep and cows on my way. I stocked up on granola bars and bottled water, then treated myself to a cup of coffee, a chocolate chip cookie the size of my head, and a nice internal meltdown in a local coffee shop. By the time I got back to the cottage, Mal's car was parked by the front door. The Lord of the Dumpster was in his room. Hearing whispering behind the closed door, I realized there was someone with him. A woman. My rubber ball heart bounced in my chest. Kathleen. I tiptoed to the door and pressed my ear to it. I deciphered some of the words and realized it couldn't be Kathleen. First of all, she sounded nothing like my half-sister. Second, she had a strong Northern English accent, not Irish. And third, this is what I got from their conversation. Mal. It's just for a few months. Woman. Then what? Mal. Then I take her and we're leaving. She likes the beach, so maybe we'll go somewhere with a lot of sun. Greece or Spain. South of France, maybe. Woman. Isn't she mad at you for having her here? Didn't take a genius to figure out I was her. And I was also about as welcome as gonorrhea. Mal. She has no idea about Rory, and I plan on keeping it that way. Makes things simple. I like simple. Woman. I could be simple for you, Mal. Mal. Certainly you can, and you are. Whoever she was didn't pick up on the insult. Shame. A punch in the nuts was just what the doctor ordered for Mal. Then the noises started. The tongues and thrusts and skin slapping skin. My thighs squeezed, and the hollow place between them ached. I thought of interrupting him to, you know, an eye for an eye and so forth, but didn't want to give him the satisfaction of knowing that I heard, that I cared. No. I moved to my room, threw myself onto the bed, flung an arm over my eyes, and shook my head. Down, girl. But it was too much, and I was too weak. I shoved my hand into my jeans and played with myself to the sound of Mal having sex with another woman. It's not cheating, I told myself the entire time. I'm not touching him. I never will. Callum and I just didn't get to finish what we'd started the night before. I decided not to leave my room unless Mal called me for work. It was stupid to think we could patch things up. He was a different person, and I needed to stop making excuses for him in my mind. I texted Callum a string of messages telling him I missed him, turned my laptop on, and worked into the night. My mom called a couple times, but I sent her to voicemail. Mal and the woman ended up doing the very same thing Cal and I had been about to do the night before, and extra loudly, no doubt so I could hear. What kind of merciless, ruthless, immoral monster cheats on his wife and also hides the fact that her half-sister and his once-upon-a-time crush is living with him for 2 months? Listening to him drilling into a woman who wasn't his wife put the stamp of disapproval on Mal. And that is very good news. I am no longer jealous of Kathleen or interested in being civilized with her husband. Anyway, that was yesterday. And today, I woke up to the faint sound of music and the strong scent of food. Bacon, eggs, freshly brewed coffee, and banana bread. My mouth waters, and I struggle to swallow my saliva. I'd kill for a good cup of coffee. Besides, seeing as I have nothing but negative feelings toward Mal, it shouldn't be too hard to face him. I crack my door open and step into the living room barefoot, my red plaid pajamas barely covering my legs, and messy hair tangled like wild branches around my face. I halt in the cove between the living room and corridor, my heart slowing along with my step. Ashton Richards. Yes, the Ashton Richards is sitting in Mal's living room, smoking a joint and wearing a golden robe with his initials printed on the breast pocket, along with sunglasses indoors. He sips his coffee and reads through something in Mal's notebook while his staff runs around in the background, cleaning and cooking like magical cartoon animals helping Cinderella get ready for the ball. I can't help but notice that Richards, despite his many apparent flaws, if you believe what the media says, is undeniably gorgeous. He looks like a really hot version of Jesus, a long-lost Hemsworth brother with long hair. Mal sits across from him in a recliner, his legs crossed over his coffee table, chewing on an unlit clove cigarette and throwing a rugby ball at the ceiling. Boys Don't Cry by The Cure is playing from a portable radio, and I will not let the fact that Mal kept his cassettes or his old-school radio endear him to me. He is not a romantic. There are platters everywhere in the open kitchen, breakfast nook, and on the table. They hold pastries, fruit, a full English breakfast, and Coke. Hold on. Coke? My eyes widen as I zoom in on the silver platter with white lines running across it. Richards lifts his head from the notebook he's reading and waves in my general direction.
Someone hand the chick an NDA. I'm trying to work here.
A blonde girl who looks eerily similar to Reiner's PA, Whitney, jogs toward me with a thick stack of papers and a pen. Mal ignores my existence. His cheekbones are ruddy, tinted pink, and I wonder if it's from the cold or from last night's orgasms. He has that lost Peter Pan look, charismatic and unassuming, yet so easily destructive. I can't even hate him all the way, no matter how hard I try.
Who's the hottie?
Richards nudges Mal's leg with his own, tilting his chin to me.
My sex slave,
Mal deadpans, catching the ball and spinning it on his finger like a pro, his eyes still hard on the ceiling. Is there anything this man can't do? Yes, stay faithful.
For real?
Ashton rips his sunglasses from his face and leans forward, checking me over more closely. I fold my hands across my chest, aware that my nipples are puckered from the cold.
Isn't she a little underdressed?
He raises a thick eyebrow over his crystal blue Caribbean Sea eye. I'm going to kill Mal. Straight up choke him. Not even in his sleep. I want him to be fully present when it happens. Mal follows Richard's gaze until his eyes land on mine. I'm still silent because I'm waiting to see how far he's going to take his weird story.
She has a hobo fetish, so I turn a blind eye to her fashion choices,
Mal explains, resuming his ball spinning.
I humor her, but I draw the line at pissing in public and flashing randoms.
I nod, sending a sugary smile to Ashton Richards. The blonde girl hands me a contract and a pen, and I sign it without even looking, my gaze still on her boss. Mal is just being humble, I begin. He's the one with the hobo fantasies. In fact, he loves trash. Just look at this place. I hand the girl the pen and motion around us. Sometimes I think he won't rest until this place is a dumpster. I once caught him making love to an empty can of baked beans.
Tomato soup, actually,
Mal amends, straight-faced, but his purple eyes are twinkling with mischief.
And that can has a name, Laura.
Ashton is looking between us now, laughing so hard tears are rolling down his cheeks. A young, hot version of the Big Lebowski.
Young love, fucking inspiring. What's your name, honey pie?
He grins at me. Rory, I say, at the same time Mal volunteers my full name.
Aurora Bell Jenkins. Her ma's entire cultural education obviously stems from Disney. Personally, I think Cruella de Vil suits her better.
Personally, I think men who cheat on their wives and keep secrets from them should be stoned to death by a herd of baseball pitchers, I retort, heading toward the kitchen and treating myself to a cup of coffee from the new machine that's been installed since yesterday. I snag a pastry from a huge platter in the breakfast nook and tear off a piece of it with my teeth.
You should move to Saudi Arabia,
Mal suggests.
Adulterers get the death penalty. Of course, that'd put you at risk, too.
I've never cheated, I growl.
Yet,
he says flatly. Bastard. Why didn't you tell me you guys were working? I ask with my mouth full, ignoring Mal's third-grade taunting. Richards is currently trying to count something with his fingers. Or perhaps he's counting his fingers and looks completely out of it. It's obvious he and the coke are on intimate terms, and that he's under the influence of multiple other substances. So help me God, I live in a house where Mal is the responsible adult.
Because there's enough drugs in here to sedate the entire country of China, Mal clips, looking at me incredulously. Thought it might be smart not to document it. I have a job to do, I say through gritted teeth. Mal's eyes light up. Really? You mean a real one, other than walking around with a camera, looking pouty and thoughtful and silly? We're locked in a stare down, and I want to snap. To snap, because he screwed someone in the room next door. Because he is being the meanest version of himself and then some. Because he is a cheater and a tool and a liar. But most of all, to snap because he is ruining this opportunity for me by not letting me do my work. We need to talk. I manage not to lurch forward and strangle him. Barely. I've tried talking to you plenty of times, and the answer has always been no. Welcome to your own medicine, Rory. Tastes like a year-old used condom, does it not? What is he talking about? He tried to talk to me? When? Where? I've been here all along. I'd know if he tried knocking on my door. The guy is unhinged. Maybe he had a few sniffs of the good stuff, too. Man, your sex slave has a mouth on her. Richard sprawls on Mal's couch, snatching a dildo-shaped bong and lighting it up, his eyes crossing as he stares at it. I hope you're not paying her. He coughs out a cloud of smoke. Only in compliments, Mal deadpans. Still overpriced for how cheeky she is, Ashton mutters, throwing me a look. She is dickable, though. Are you sharing? Mal shrugs, chewing on the bottom of a lighter. Certain holes? Thanks. I'll make sure to note this on your accolades when I file the sexual harassment suit, I say cheerfully. That makes Ashton cough and lean forward. He is finally snapping out of it. Come on now, sex slave. Don't be so uptight, he giggles to himself. I just said the word tight. I need to get out of here. I have to. I don't want to spend the rest of my life in jail, and they just might bring me to the point of double murder. There are too many witnesses around. No, thank you. I storm back to my room, get dressed, grab my backpack and camera, and head out into the bitter cold of late December. They're still where I left them on the couch and recliner when I move out into moss and green hills and naked trees, making my way down the stony path from Mal's cottage to Main Street. I put my earbuds in and let the words of Drunken Lullabies by Flogging Molly seep into me. I kick empty bags of chips and crushed cans of soda along my way down to the village. I hate this place. I should just buy a ticket and join Cal in England. That thought makes the noose around my rubber ball heart looser. Now that's a promising prospect. Staying in Callum's parents' house. They live in Virginia Water, Surrey. I've seen pictures of their estate, and it makes Buckingham Palace look like a studio in Williamsburg. Though being there does nothing for my career. I've spoken to his mother on the phone, to his sister Lottie, too. They all seem nice and kind and cheerful and sane. Sane. That's what Summer meant when she pushed me into Callum's arms. I make a mental note to talk to her. I promise to call every day, and so far I've only managed to text her a few times. I'm already breaking my promise. I would give up a lot to have someone to talk to right now, but I don't want to worry Callum over nothing. I need to calm down, chug more coffee, then go back and take pictures of these clowns. Photoshopping out any evidence of Richard's drug use. My phone vibrates in my pocket, and I take it out, only to see my mother's name flashing.
I tuck it back into my jacket with a sigh. Clearly, I'm okay. I sent her 2 emails reporting as much. Can she really blame me for not wanting to talk to her? All she does is make me feel guilty about coming here. When I get to the village, I buy a pack of gum from a newsagent. As I reach into my pocket to dispose of the change, I hear chattering behind me. 2 chicks who sound around my age, maybe slightly older. I don't turn around, even when one of them clearly has a Northern English accent. Liverpool is my guess, though I'm hardly an expert.
Can't be her. Look at her scar, Maeve. It is her.
She's supposed to be American.
I heard an American accent. Stop being ridiculous. Why would she?
I steal a quick glance, barely noticeable, just to see what they look like. Maybe they're friends of Kathleen's. Perhaps they know me through Mal, who told people about my birthmark, even though he knows how self-conscious I am about it. Either way, it's in poor taste, and at least one of them, the leggy blonde with the familiar English accent, is in no position to judge me, seeing as she sleeps with a married man. I grab a napkin from the register, stuff it into my pocket, turn around, and flash them a smile. Let me give you a direct answer. Yes, I am her. What did you hear? That I stole Mal from Kathleen? That my mom is a bitch? That my late dad is a no-show drunk? Been there, heard that. So let me add another rumor into the mix. This one is also true, so listen carefully. I'm living with Malachi for the next 2 months. Under the same roof. But I won't be screwing around with your friend's husband. I want nothing to do with either of them, so feel free to pass your message to Kathleen. And by the look of it, anyone else in this village. It's official. I'm the pariah of this godforsaken town, thanks to my lovely host. Astonishment drips from their faces, their mouths limp, their eyes comically wide. The blonde is wearing tight white jeans and a huge pink faux fur coat. Her friend is a petite, curvy brunette with farmer's boots and a neon green bomber jacket. They're both nursing steaming cups of coffee.
How dare you talk about Kathleen like that?
The blonde gasps theatrically, snapping out of her shock. Never mind the fact that she's sleeping with Kathleen's husband.
Let me guess, you're here for your inheritance from your father.
What? Why would I come here 8 years after he died? I'm not interested in my late father's money, I clip out. I wish he'd been broke so people would stop accusing me of going after his fortune. No wonder Mal hates money so much. It's everything people think about.
Right,
the blonde snorts. The brunette shakes her head, elbowing her friend.
Stop it, Maeve. I think she really doesn't know. I'm Heather, and this is Maeve.
Reluctantly, I shake both their hands. Maeve still looks upset by my existence, and I'm trying really hard not to out her sordid doings yesterday in front of her friend.
I'm Rory. We know, they say in unison. I didn't think she'd be that pretty. Koth said she was just okay,
Maeve grumbles, then bites her lip, realizing she said that aloud. Do you live around here? I look between them, trying to break the ice. Heather nods.
Just down the street, on Christchurch Grove. Ours are the blue and red houses facing each other. We're married to the O'Leary twins, you see. She's married to Sean, and I'm married to Daniel.
This is way more information than I asked for. I smile and step away toward the street.
What are you doing living with Mal if you two aren't a thing?
Maeve narrows her eyes at me. Everything in her face is squeezed in concentration, like her life depends on my next words. We work together. I thought he married Kath.
He did.
Heather sighs, as if everyone knows how that turned out. Well, I don't. I'd kill for an answer. Well, maybe not kill, but seriously injure someone, preferably Mal himself. Did they get a divorce? I'm starting to think I've gone mad. Either Mal and Kathleen have a super open relationship, or I'm missing something crucial here.
Mal would never.
Maeve's bitter tone does not escape me.
He's loyal to a fault.
Yeah, loyal. So, so loyal. Kath left him then? Their eyes grow so big, I'm afraid they're going to roll out of their sockets. Realizing this is a dead-end conversation, I mutter a goodbye and start backing away, turning around and taking off. I need to talk to someone, all right. Father Doherty. Yeah, he'll be able to tell me what the hell this entire inheritance obsession is about. And maybe shed light on the Mal and Kathleen situation. God knows Mal is not helpful in this regard. I know Father Doherty lives in this village. It's just a matter of finding him. I'll go door to door if I must. I tromp my way back toward Mal's cottage and take the long way up, the one between fields of barley and wheat. The air is fresh, and the wheat is brown and beaten by the cold, whooshing back and forth in the wind like silk. By the time I see the cottage, my heart rate is back to normal. I push the door open and find Mal sitting in the backyard, which has been fully furnished with loungers, a dining table, two fire tables, and a fancy grill. The entire house looks different, uncluttered, yet full of new, shiny things. I watch Mal sit back at one of the tables outside through the living room window. He's flirting with two American girls from Richard's staff. He is nice old Mal again, the one I fell for. I shake my head, roll my eyes, and head to my room, stepping over the threshold. I blink, turn around, stalk back to the corridor. Check it really is my room. It is. Then re-enter, looking around. What in the name of Jesus and his holy crew? Someone has removed the bed I've been sleeping on and replaced it with a gigantic plush, king-sized mattress on an upholstered white bed frame with the initials A.R. There are two nightstands, a central sound system, a TV, every game device under the sun, and a clothes rack with robes, fancy coats, and colorful blazers. I shoot out to the backyard, feeling like my feet are hovering over the floor. I'm not mad. No, I'm raging. I can feel my pulse everywhere, including my eyelids and toes. A feral scream lodges in my throat. I throw the back door open and it slaps against the wall from impact. How dare you? I fling my arms at Mal. He looks up from something one of the American girls is showing him on her phone. Her ass is perched on the edge of the table his feet are on, and all three are staring at me now. He watches me with quiet amusement. Care to be more specific? I quit my mind-reading job last week. The girls snicker, exchanging looks. My room! My things! Everything is gone! I'm finding it hard not to stomp my foot and throw a fit, and Mal knows it because the more flustered I am, the calmer he looks. He yawns provocatively, leaning back in his chair. About that, we had a bit of a space problem with Richard's moving in, so I had to put your things in my room. Hey, roomie, he winks, his eyes light and full of mischief. The girls sigh audibly next to him. I'm about to throw up. I'm not rooming with you. I fold my arms over my chest.
Looks like you are from where I'm sitting. Then again, you're awfully short. Sometimes you don't see the whole picture.
No, he didn't. You sit on a throne of delusions if you think I'm sharing a bed with you.
No one said anything about sharing a bed, silly. I rolled you out a sleeping bag on the floor. Chivalry is not dead, Rory. I'm living proof of that.
You want me to sleep on the floor?
He shrugs. You can stay awake on the floor if you like. What you do with your spare time on the floor is not my concern.
More laughter. He'd better be kidding me. Get up, I grit out. The women exchange bitches crazy looks. They aren't wrong. Not now, anyway. Mal gives them a meaningful, see what I have to deal with, look. He gets up, swaggering over to me as lazily as he possibly can without standing still. When he's within reach, I grab the collar of his shirt and jerk him indoors. Everyone other than the girls is gone, the house fully prepared for Richards, but I don't take any chances we'll be heard. Richards is probably touring the village, trying out the local beer, butter, and babes. I shove Mal into the bathroom and lock the door. He leans back on the vanity, smirking down at me like I'm adorable. Mal, I start, taking a cleansing breath. We can't sleep in the same room. I have a boyfriend. You have a wife. You care about what she thinks. I know you do. I don't know if I'm trying to convince him or myself. I heard you talking to that English lady yesterday. At the mention, Mal's lips curl in satisfaction. Of course, I was meant to hear him nailing Maeve through the mattress, floor, and lower sections of hell, giving her 4 orgasms and 3 praises for Jesus, God, Mary, and every saint in the Bible. You said you want to take Kath somewhere sunny after this is all over. Maybe you two are going through a hard time.
We are, he interjects. Horrible, really.
I nod, eager to make my point. Yes, all couples do. I get it. And maybe you're on a break, and that's why you were with someone else. I'm not judging. But if we share a room, Kathleen will never, ever forgive you, and we both know it. And I will never be able to mend my relationship with my sister. Not that I particularly want that, but still, it would be nice to have the choice. He pokes his lower lip out and tugs at it, his purple eyes raking my face. He is so painfully, unfairly beautiful. I want to lash out at him for abusing the power of his looks by being so impossible. He licks his lips, his eyes dropping to my mouth. I know what he's thinking, and the blood that's buzzing with anger in my veins is now full-blown humming with something that feels deadly close to anticipation. The familiar chill turns hot again, and I know he is my lighter, ready to set me on fire with a flick of his fingers. I take a step back, clearing my throat. There's also another option, I say.
You can't go to a hotel. New Year's is around the corner and everything's booked.
No, I lift my eyes to his. There's another room at the end of the hall. I don't mention that I'm dying to know why the room is locked. I simply watch as his expression morphs from easy to very frighteningly dead. His thick eyebrows furrow, his eyes dim, and his jaw squares. I don't need him to open his mouth to know it was a mistake to bring it up, but to leave no doubt, he pushes off the vanity and crowds me, his limbs easy and long and forbidding. I swallow, but don't cower. I tilt my chin up, not even blinking, not even when he reaches to cup the side of my neck, tilting his head sideways as his gaze scorches a path into my soul, and rummages through it like it's a stack of secondhand clothes at a charity shop.
Let's get one thing straight. You are not to talk about, refer to, or think about that room. You are, in fact, the very reason why that room exists. You will sleep in the sleeping bag, or you will not sleep at all. Take the sofa if you're really into pneumonia. There's no central heating, though, and the only heaters working are in mine and Ashton's rooms. After that little stunt in the living room earlier, I doubt he'd let you warm his bed. And just to make things perfectly clear, you're not welcome in mine. I open my mouth, about to tell him to go screw himself when there's pounding on the door. I jump in surprise, and he takes a step back, running his hand through his inky hair. I drop my gaze and see that he is hard, rock hard, fully tented, and turned on. I flush pink, reaching for the door handle, desperate to get out. Mal puts his hand on mine to stop me. Our eyes lock, flick, and just like that, I'm burning.
Mal, we're off. Make sure to wake Ashton up in about 30 minutes, okay? He has a call with Reiner booked for 6 p.m. your time. See you tomorrow, or earlier if you want. You have my number, one of the girls giggles. Ciao, handsome.
The front door slams. Mal is the first to move. He opens the door and we both slip out and disappear into different rooms. I go into Mal's room to take my stuff into the living room. Lack of heating be damned. And Mal goes into my former room to wake up Ashton. I'm tucking linens into the sides of the sofa pillow when Mal walks into the front room, his face ashen. I don't ask him what's wrong, because frankly, I don't care anymore.
Richards is gone, he tells me. He's not in his room.
Our gazes connect, and we both say in unison, fuck. Rory. Sometime in the night, I wake up feeling warm for a change. I blink my swollen eyes and look around me, pitch black. The surface beneath me dips, the springs whining. I'm in a bed. Mal's bed. Whoa. Panic dries my throat, and suddenly I'm sweating everywhere. I did not sleep with him after breaking down because of my father. No way. I pat the mattress behind me and find the bed empty. Phew. Still not convinced, I roll toward the side that's facing the open door. Pat for my phone on the nightstand. Mal put it there. I somehow knew he would. And turn on my flashlight, aiming it toward the living room. It illuminates Mal's silhouette on the couch, his ripped, smooth back facing me. All arches and bows of muscles under the thin fabric of his shirt. I remember his scent in the rain. Male and leather and clove cigarettes. And Mal. Then his words come back to haunt me. He wants us to surrender. Despite that, I know I should fight this. I've worked hard to forget about him. The end game is setting fire to me, like he did all those years ago. I turn the flashlight off and slide my phone back onto the nightstand. But there's something on the surface, something soft, yet crisp. I turn the flashlight on again, picking it up. My heart stops as soon as I see it. In the unlikely event. Our contract, the napkin. It's here, intact. He kept it. It's on.
A note from Maeve. Hello, it's me, Maeve. Just one little thing before you go back to your daily schedule. To be perfectly clear, when Mal called me out of the blue after years of radio silence, I very much wanted to ignore him. I did. He's been horrible to me for the past few years, you see. Left me heartbroken and shattered when he said goodbye out of nowhere without giving me a sufficient reason. Yet I couldn't stay away. A part of me, a small, stupid part of me, thought he might have changed his mind, that perhaps he saw the light and realized I was more than just a shag, that we were soulmates or something. He proved me wrong as soon as I got to his bedroom. I swear, he was busier making me scream and the bed creak than anything else. It was obviously a revenge shag, and looky me, I was in the middle of it, while she was listening next door. I know she was because she was gasping and moaning too, which only made him fuck me with more stamina and speed than ever. I felt like a condom, like I was the only thing separating them from one another. It wasn't really me he was sleeping with, it was her. And she imagined him too. Which reminded me why I'd gone and cheated on my husband every single time Mal gave me a ring, even though I'm no silly girl. I knew, why Mal started sleeping with me. To hurt my husband, and why he did it last night. To hurt Aurora. 'Tis the truth that sleeping with another man when you have a family of your own is a villainous thing to do. But what about me? What about my feelings? My existence? Shall I live my entire life washing and cleaning and feeding and cooking? Loveless and lonely and slaving to kids who don't care and a husband who won't even look at me? I didn't mean to hurt my family, to put what I have in jeopardy. I didn't mean to fall for the unattainable, to ruin so many things along the way. Now, my Sean knows, but we are not getting a divorce. No, he is better than that, better than me. He just told me if I ever see Mal again in private, he would take the kids away. I know he wants to kill Mal. I want to kill Mal too, but for a different reason. I just saw the girl he fell in love with and realized I don't stand a chance. There's a reason why fairy tales end right after the prince saves the princess. No one likes to see her nursing postpartum depression and a drunken husband all whilst folding the laundry. And Mal, he was the prince who blazed by on a horse, heading in a different direction.
9. Present. Mal. Rory's shivering. I told her not to come with. Did she listen? No, she didn't. Does she ever? Also negatory. She just grabbed her camera and flew through the door, taking this as an opportunity to work. Of course, the fact that I am now the host of a currently AWOL, coked-up rock star whose name is synonymous with recklessness is part of why I'm ready to smash my head against a rock. Ashton Richards is an alright guy, in the sense that he is unaware of just how irritating he is. He is one of those born-a-cunt people who thinks the world owes them something, and that others should do the job for them. The coke addiction is a byproduct of being an insta-rock star. If Mick Jagger and Steven Tyler had decided to skip on one leg 4 days a week as some sort of rebellious statement, he'd have overdeveloped quads and would be late everywhere. My phone rings 1,000 times a minute. 10 missed calls from Big Wig Cokehead. That's the nickname I gave Reiner. We trudge past the fields by the cottage, and I omit the fact that we are technically trespassing. The fields are no longer mine. I sold every inch of my land except the cottage after the night that ruined everything. I didn't want the responsibility, and I needed the money to buy a new house for Mam, Father Doherty, and Kathleen's mum, Elaine. Then there was that emergency surgery for which we had to fly in doctors from America. That cost me a pretty penny, too. I stop in front of a shack-like bungalow, the only house remotely close to mine, curl my knuckles, and pound on the door. The place belongs to the Smiths, the family, not the band, and the Smiths know things Rory doesn't, so of course, I'm wary of the exchange.
Hello?
Brenda, a 60-something-year-old housewife, opens the door. A warm, yellowish glow and the scent of baked pies spill out from behind her. She wipes her swollen, veined hands with the hem of the apron wrapped around her big frame. The minute she sees me, her face alters from relaxed to pitying.
Dear God, Malachi, how have you been? I've been meaning to come check on you.
Have you seen a strange-looking man around by any chance? I cut her off. I did not consider the fact that the entire village treats me like Moses left in the reeds of the Nile River. Maybe to survive, probably to die a slow, lonely death. Surely Rory's going to pick up on my sob story soon, if she hasn't already. Brenda's brows nosedive.
How do you mean, dodgy looking? Suspicious?
More like crazy looking. Golden robe, long hair. Sort of like a Kardashian version of Jesus Christ. She tisks.
Sorry, dear.
All right. I turn around. Cheers.
Wait, come in, have some pie.
Brenda is calling after me, eager to help the poor lost boy. but I jerk at Rory's hand before she listens to the questions and the pleas and the condolences.
Must you always act like you've been raised by swamp creatures?
Rory breaks away from my touch, jamming her fists in her pockets. Her teeth are chattering. The girl is going to die if she tries sleeping in the living room tonight. I don't answer her.
Reiner is blowing up my phone.
She tries changing the subject.
Yours too?
Yeah.
Should we answer?
We are not a thing. I do whatever I choose to do, and you are free to do the same. Today, when Rory and I had the argument in the bathroom that resulted in all the blood in my body rushing to my cock, I almost told her she could take my bed and I'd take the sleeping bag. Then she had to go and bring up the locked room, and all the dark memories poured in, washing away every good intention I may have had.
Where could he go? He didn't take the car.
She skips to warm up, unfazed by my behavior. The car is still parked in front of my house. Besides, I highly doubt he can operate a light switch, let alone an actual vehicle. No, Richards must be somewhere nearby. My phone rings again. Reiner. I don't particularly care that we missed the call. I give a shite about this job a little less than I give one about the well-being of endangered cockroaches in Madagascar. Richards is the one with the problem. Rory, too.
Reiner is pissed.
She uhs.
This project is going to kill my career.
We'll find him, I say.
Yeah.
She does weird things in her body, twisting and skipping to keep warm.
Maybe. Other than this house, it's all open fields. I'm surprised you even get mail here.
You'd know. You sent me one hell of a letter. We make our way past the Smith's house and down a valley. It's getting darker, and I know we're going to have a problem if we don't find him in the next half hour. I don't want to call the police and report him missing. It's one thing to lose your wallet, but how does one lose the biggest rock star in the world? In other news, Rory is on a mission to talk until my ears fall off.
I think I hear something coming from over there.
She points at the sheds out left, a 5-minute walk from us.
Let's go check. Anyway, I know how that is. For the first 2 years in college, the dorms were full, so I got a partly subsidized house off campus. The place was huge, but it was on this farm that was really far away from civilization. People got their mail maybe once a week. We were constantly late on bill payments, so we ended up having to rent a P.O. box on campus. But those were broken into all the time because parents were sending their kids money and lots of valuable things. It was a nightmare.
She's babbling. I don't care about her P.O. box, about her former house, about dorms and random people's parents, and I definitely couldn't give a toss about what bills she paid 8 years ago.
Finally,
she continues, undeterred.
I decided to redirect all my mail to my mom's house. You know how I feel about her, but I just couldn't risk it. I was already drowning in debt. I didn't need unpaid bills with interest on top. Plus, she offered to pay for the entire thing and took care of it herself, so that was a bonus. Here, let's go this way.
She stops, pointing behind the barn.
I think that's where I heard the noise coming from.
I follow her, frowning. I believe my views about her verbal diarrhea have changed. So you got your mail redirected to New Jersey, I say, controlling the level of interest apparent in my voice.
Yeah, living in the middle of nowhere is bad for mail, dude.
Since when?
Like 3 months after I moved out, something like that?
Huh. I'm keeping it bored, though my mind is screaming, what the feck, all in capitals. Pieces of the puzzle seem to be falling into place, but the overall picture is all wonky and wrong. Different from what I thought. It doesn't paint Rory as the villain and me the hopeless protagonist.
The house was neat, though. I shared it with 8 other girls. One of them was my best friend, Summer. I don't remember if I told you about her. She became an actress in an off-broad.
That means your mom opened your letters for you. I interrupt, my brain threatening to melt now. She is still bouncing and shivering. I could put her out of my misery by touching her. Getting her hot and bothered has never been an issue, but being rejected by her would crush me.
Yeah, but I didn't get letters, you know, just bills and stuff. I was starting to build my credit. I couldn't afford late payments.
She messes with her camera, which is attached to a strap on her neck. Through my carefully crafted exterior, it hits me like a ton of bricks. I've been missing a big part of the truth of it all. The one unspoken. Her truth. I never bothered to ask her version of things. Not that I had the chance to. Still. I listened to two sides of the story, but neither of them was hers, Neither of them came from her mouth. One came from Kathleen, the other from Debbie, her mother. And all that time, it seems Rory was oblivious. Her mail was going to New Jersey. Sure, there are a few loose ends, but with a crushing weight, I know in my gut that everything I believed all this time was a lie. Everything I believed about her. Rory never set out to destroy me. Rory didn't know. Her mother was responsible for this. All of this. Rory didn't reject me. She didn't betray me. She didn't hate me for what happened. What probably never happened at all. She is still talking, oblivious, trying to win me over, maybe. She's playing with the hoop in her nose, nervous. God, Rory. God. The earth under my feet is moving. Things inside of me are shifting too. This changes everything. Rory is still pure and good and meant to be mine. And I will make her so. Even if I have to fight Callum and her mother and the entire village. Which I will. I might have to resume my morning push-ups if I plan on starting a full-blown war with the entire universe. She's craning her neck now, looking for Ashton, oblivious to the life-changing pep talk I'm giving myself in my head. She has no idea that my whole world has transformed in the last minute.
Moved to Manhattan from a 5,000-square-foot house to a 500-square-foot one-bedroom apartment. Summer put up a bead curtain to divide our makeshift rooms, but let me tell you, it's awkward when she brings guys back.
I stop walking. She stops, too, eventually. It takes her 5 steps to realize I'm not there with her. She turns around to face me, slanting her head, confused. All this time. All this anger. For nothing. I want to hug her. I want to fall down on my knees and ask for her forgiveness. To cry. To tell her what happened. To hide it from her, so she won't know how awful it has been. I want to kiss her. Dip my fingers in her long, currently snow-white hair. Press my lips between her eyes and thighs and over her beautiful, flawless heart that always beats faster when it's under my palm. I want to keep her warm. Forever.
What?
Rory frowns like a wee child that's been scolded for nothing.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Like what? I smile, happy she can't see the glimmer in my eyes in the darkness.
Like, I don't know, like I just saved your life or something. You look upset, but happy.
I am both.